Well, in most cases, probably trying to shed some light on this vaccine situation for you, giving you some more information so you can make up your own mind about what you're going to do for you, yourself, your family. Up next, Dr. Gary Ridenour joins us. Gary, of course, is the author of the Pandemic book, and he's been on many of our news segments when it comes to these measles outbreaks or Ebola, and we're going to get his take. Gary is generally a proponent in vaccines. So he's next on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Gary Ridenour with us, attended Hiram College, attended medical school in Guadalajara, Mexico, did his internship in Saskatchewan, and moved to St. Louis, my neck of the woods, for his residency in internal medicine. Gary was one of the main characters in the movie Bad Medicine and also ran his own clinic for the poor. And here he is on Coast to Coast AM. Hi, Gary. Thanks for staying up so late for us.
Well, thank you. It's quite a difference to be on at 1 o'clock.
Than these news snippets that you do at 10 o'clock Pacific time for us.
That's a little bit different. But, you know, measles, you know, a lot of people were on tonight. And, you know, I wish they would, you know, kind of everybody would just get off their horses and take a breather and look at some of the facts that since 1971, the MMR prevented 52 million cases of measles, 17,400 cases of intellectual disabilities, and prevented 5,200 people from dying.
Those are big figures, big
Those
numbers.
Are big numbers. And when we talk about the autism thing, you have to throw that one out the window right off the bat, because Japan in 1989, they had an MMR vaccine, which was causing a lot of side effects, and they had about a five-year period where they did not give any MMRs. And during that five-year period, the rate of autism continued to climb.
So I'm assuming you are a vaccine supporter.
I am for this, and it's, you know, when it's tough when you're taking a vaccine and or a group of vaccines and giving it to tens of millions of people and expecting that everybody's going to walk away without a problem.
All right, so the problems that they do have, you will admit, it could happen.
Oh, yeah, my three sons got their MMRs in their hips. In their thighs, and all three of them, when they got them, they walked around like somebody shot them in the leg with a 45 for about 2 days.
Well, that's like when I was getting my shots for the Navy.
Yeah.
And my arm blew up like a basketball. It hurt. Now, I don't know if that's normal or not, but I must have had a reaction to it.
Yeah, that's your immune system going after it. In fact, the MMR, you can also get a warm lump where the injection is, and underneath that is what's called a sterile abscess. There's a collection of fluid in there, which you don't have to drain or anything, but it's a reaction of your immune system to its first visit by these viruses.
Gary, Dr. Andrew Wakefield, who has been discredited, was the first to say that the MMR vaccine and autism are tied together, linked together. He is not opposed to the single-source measles vaccine, for example, or rubella. He's saying don't mix them in one. So what do you say about that?
Well, you know, to start off with, Wakefield, I read something that it was, his paper was the most bogus medical hoax in the last 100 years.
They went after him.
Now, they did. And with good reason, because also in the reading, I found out that he was working with another vaccine company to try to replace the measles vaccine with a British vaccine company. And that it would be profitable for him, but that's just the hearsay in the.
I didn't hear that.
And but the autism rate is still going up, and I've seen numbers quoted that one out of 80 children, and then I've seen quotes of one out of 160 children born today have some form of autism. And they're wondering, is this going up because of you know, something that we're doing, or is it the fact that we're getting better at identifying children with autism, where 15 years ago they would just be referred to as being retarded?
What do you think about giving parents at least the right, not the state mandate, to have their child immunized or not, but it's their choice?
Well, I would say that I'll stand in the middle and say, you have the right to make the choice about your children's health. However, you also will probably have to homeschool your child because we don't want them in the public school systems.
So you're saying if you're not vaccinated, we don't want you around other kids who have been. But if the other kids... This is the great question that came up about an hour ago.
Yep.
If the other children have been vaccinated, what's the difference of being around a kid who hasn't? Even if they have measles or they come down with this disease, if I've been vaccinated against it, shouldn't I be okay?
You are, but the problem is that your unvaccinated children, like the... I believe 5,000 children that were admitted to the Bay Area kindergartens last fall had no shot records. And you're a school, and you get paid by head count on how many kids are in your school.
Sure.
And suddenly you've got a bunch of unvaccinated children that are home sick with the measles, and your income goes down. The other thing is somebody's going to have to stay with the child, which means somebody's going to have to cut work. And some of the papers said that per case of measles today, it's between $5,000 and $10,000, in lost.
Well, okay, be that as it may, but the argument has been that people don't want unvaccinated kids around their vaccinated kids. But why? I mean, can you still come down with the measles if you've been vaccinated against it?
But if you've got your second vaccine, you're about 98% safe. So you still got 2% of your kids that the vaccine may not have taken. And the other problem is that there's 21 strains of the measles virus. So you don't know if the uninoculated child is going to bring into school a variant of the measles, and a lot of kids will be out of school with flu-like symptoms.
What percent do you think of the kids who are not vaccinated come down with the measles?
Oh, that's tough. They've got all kinds of numbers for that, and I would say probably 15% or so or more. But you have to understand that it's now estimated at the death rate really is about 0.3%, because children that get the measles today, if they get a secondary bacterial infection and pneumonia, we have antibiotics to treat them and so on. The problem is that you run into a family that are very holistic or have religious beliefs and don't want the child treated with antibiotics or anything else. And 1991 in Philadelphia, two fundamentalist churches had five of their children die because they did not believe in the vaccine but the power of prayer. And two of the children were denied antibiotics because they did not think that would help them either.
So in your particular case, you would say get vaccinated, but again, let's get back to states' rights versus the parents' rights. I think the parent at least should still have the right to do what he or she wants to do.
Well, yeah, I think there's a middle ground there, and that's where, and quite frankly, a lot of the people I know who are, their children are not vaccinated, are homeschooling too. I mean, they don't believe in the school system. So they homeschool. But the problem is that we also have a lot of children flocking in from Mexico that are don't have vaccines either. And you know, you have to bring out the fact that, my God, you got to get a tetanus shot at least.
Is it a myth or not, Gary, that more children die from the measles vaccine than the actual measles?
That is a myth. The the numbers, it's the death rate before was like 0.001%, and then after the vaccine became readily available, it went to 0.0000 practically. The death rate just dropped off. 87 to 2000, it was 0.3%. But the problem is that, you know, let's take a little side trip here. And what if somebody just goes and modifies this measles vaccine and makes it highly fatal with a 95% death rate? And it gets loose into the uninoculated population and kills 95% of the kids that get the vaccine. You know, they get the terrorist vaccine.
Well, if a terrorist is going to do it, they're going to do it. Let's go to Pat in Minneapolis, east of the Rockies. Pat, you're up with us.
Since I've heard about some doctor's offices and clinics, not just pediatricians either, some family practices that are excluding families without up-to-date vaccinations because they don't want them in their waiting rooms, I think for families that are very pro-vaccination, that there should be schools that do exclude all students and even staff who are not up to date on their shots, so that they also have freedom of choice to have that environment where people are up to date on their shots. And one reason I've heard of is so that women who are pregnant or want to become pregnant are not around people who don't have protection against rubella. And then there are people who have little babies at home who are too young for certain measles shots, and they don't want to bring, you know, anybody bringing home measles to a little baby. And then there are a lot of families that have immune-compromised people.
Hmm. Yeah, and I agree ahead, with that. I personally, as a physician, I wouldn't turn away somebody because they don't have their vaccinations. I mean, they're my patients and they're humans also, and I'm going to treat them just like I treat everybody else. I'm not going to exclude somebody because they've made a choice like that.
What if somebody had measles and wanted to walk into your clinic or wherever?
Oh, well, we'd have a mask on them right away, and get them off into a room as fast as possible and talk to them and see what we can do for them, and then clean down the room and the door handles and everything else, and leave the mask on them and, get them out of there. Today you can spot measles. The rash is so unbelievable, but it is a hard thing if they come in and they're incubating and they're infectious. They could spread it off to another person that's not immunized.
Okay, let's go next. Eric is in Bakersfield, California. Thanks for calling, Eric. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, thank you very much. First-time caller, long-time listener. I just wanted to get my opinion in there a little bit. I just wanted to say that personally, I experienced my daughter when she was approximately 4 years old, that she had taken the MMR vaccination, and the next day she completely turned from outspoken and happy little girl to introvert and not talking. She came down with autism, and I know for a fact that it was the MMR vaccination.
Yeah, and that's a tough one now because of the fact that there is just a pile of medical information coming in on the MMR and autism that they still claim there's no association to it. And,
at all, or is it possible that some could do this? Come down with it.
Period is not it, but I read about some of the cases where the autism appeared on day zero, which was the day they got the shot. And autism is a very, very complex neurological disease, and there's a lot of variation in the neurological wiring in your brain that happens. And it's kind of hard to push that a vaccine, which is just a slightly dead virus, could get into your brain and rewire it because it has no chromosomes or anything. However, there are children who have immune system problems or have problems with what's called the mitochondria, the little things inside of your cells that make energy, and you hit them with the one case, this child received 5 vaccines in one day, and within 2 days had signs of autism, and they said that there was a coexisting problem, and the vaccine then accelerated the coexisting problem.
We go to Galadriel in Oak Harbor, Washington. Welcome to the program. I hope I pronounced your name right.
Yes, you did. It's nice to talk to you again, George.
Perfect.
You should do this on an open line tonight.
Oh, boy.
A special line.
Yeah.
I've been arguing with people for weeks now, one of them being my 35-year-old daughter, who had one vaccination at the age of 1 year, her first one and last one. She was spiking 108 fevers, 108 temperature. She had febrile seizures. She spent 5 days in the hospital. They threw every test at her that they could think of, including a spinal tap, and they kept telling me there was no reason why she was having these fevers. She ended up being on anti-seizure meds for 2 years, and I never got her vaccinated, and I was thankful I was able to sign a waiver so she didn't have to have any more.
So you never had any regrets after that?
No, not at all. And her brother, who is 10 years older than her, I never had him vaccinated again either. He had all the baby shots, and he was a sickly kid anyway. Mm-hmm. But my daughter was so healthy. She was, she was a really healthy baby. And she didn't have autism or any lasting effects, thank goodness. But she's angry with me that I keep telling people this story because she's of the mind that it's better to have a baby with autism than a dead baby.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a good point. And febrile high fevers definitely cause seizures. And it can be a problem for a couple of years, but you said she got the MMR, then how long after the MMR?
She's gone now, Gary. She's left us.
Oh, okay. But, it's the causal relationship is not very good. And the other thing with the autism thing is that you go to some of the autism websites and you get first-person, stories about what happened to their child. But then when you look at the millions of children that had nothing, it kind of scares you for those few people.
All right, Gary, thanks for spending the late hour with us. Up next, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. You'll hear what she has to say in a moment. I wanted to share an email we got from Rebecca about her mother. Listen to this one. Says, tonight my mom is not listening to you as she has enjoyed doing so for so many, many years. She is in a comatose state that she has been in for approximately 16 hours. She has been suffering for about a year from a malignant tumor in her brain. Your radio show brought her much entertainment and enlightenment. She was curious and intrigued about what was going to happen to her any day. Your exploration of going over to the other side made her feel like an excited adventurer. She has started on her journey now. I spoke to her on the telephone yesterday, and her voice sounded like she was seeing glorious, undescribable sights as she conversed with me. I have never, ever heard my mother speak in that tone to me before. She was leaving our shared consciousness, and she was perceiving something absolutely thrilling. I was happy for her. Sad to be left. No fear, though. Thank you for all the courage and desire to seek that you gave her. Although I know she will never wake up and talk to me in this world again, I can now accept it. Well, we're keeping Dr. Sherry Tenpenny as the one to just wrap things up. Osteopathic medical doctor, board certified on three specialties, founder of the Tenpenny Integrative Medical Center as well. A couple books out there saying no to vaccines, foul bird flu. We tried to balance the night for you, but here's Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Well, what do you think so far, Sherry?
George, what I think is that you need to have me on for a three-hour segment to repeat everything that was said before. I've been pacing the floor listening to the radio, just chomping at the bit to get on and refute some of these things that have been previously said.
You're like a horse in a chute at a racetrack, aren't you?
I do. It's like the Kentucky Derby, like in that little shot, just waiting for the bell to happen.
Let me go. Well, let's go back a little bit, Sherry, and just give us your overview on vaccines. You've heard Dr. Wakefield. You've heard those who are pro. You've heard those who are con.
Well, my journey started in September of 2000 when I went to the National Vaccine Information Center meeting in Washington, D.C. I came home and started reading CDC documents, the Pediatric Infectious Disease Journal, Vaccine, New England Journal, all the conventional medical literature, and found all kinds of discrepancies. Many times when you read the full study, you go, how in the world did they come up with that conclusion? Because the study doesn't even say that. And so after, going on almost 15 years of my life and logging over 20,000 hours of time, to hear someone just come back and do nothing but party the parrot line and guess about their statistics and keep using the word inoculation when it's not even the right word and saying that just because you get a vaccine, you're immune. I mean, these are people that really need to do some of their own homework.
What do you think of Dr. Wakefield, who was truly ostracized? They came after him with the guns a-blazing, and they took him down.
Well, what Andy's paper said, if anybody would bother to read it, and it's still out there on the internet, even though it had been taken down from the Lancet site, and retracted from Lancet. It was a case study. It was 12 patients that had autism, that had GI dysfunction, and he did a colonoscopy on those children and said, you know, they have something called ileolymphoid hyperplasia, which is like nodular swollen lymph glands, and we think that there might be vaccine-strain measles that are maybe causing this inflammation. Perhaps, not conclusively, but perhaps we ought to look at this more closely. He actually picked up a stick and poked it in the eye of the giant named Merck, and they went after him. And one thing after another, and it was a case report. And, George, doctors have been writing case reports about their findings since the time that journals began in the 1800s. And so I think that, you know, and now every single time that somebody wants to say something about autism or about the MMR, it always goes back to, well, that doctor has been discredited and his one study has been tossed out, as though the only possible vaccine that could cause autism is the MMR, and as if the MMR has been completely exonerated and has no other side effects or possible problems just because of Andy Wakefield's one study that they discredited.
Why do you think, Sherry, that so many mainstream medical practitioners who would hear this program and hear you and those who are against vaccines just go absolutely crazy?
Because they've not done one stitch of research. When they've got people like me and Mary Holland and a whole long list of other doctors and researchers that have probably collectively put in hundreds of thousands of hours of research, and to hear Dr. Paul Offit say, I won't debate any of you people because there's only one side that is supported by the science, and that's my side, which tells me that he's never read anything of the science and has just stopped with his conclusion that vaccines are safe, effective, they protect you, and they're harmless, and doesn't even look at the large body of information that says otherwise.
Are we dealing with two issues? And issue one would be parental rights to make up their own mind, and then issue two would be, are the vaccines safe or not?
Yes, that's correct. I think that those are two separate issues, and I think that to look at the science is really to look at all of the science. George, I'm going to read you, it's very short, it's about five short sentences.
Yeah, okay.
And this comes from a public health journal that was published in 1967. It's a statement of public health service.
And it says, for centuries, the measles virus has maintained a remarkably stable relationship with man. The clinical disease is a characteristic syndrome notified by the constancy and only moderately severe. Complications are infrequent, and with adequate medical care, fatality is rare. Susceptibility to the disease wanes after the mother's immunity, and that is universal. Immunity following recovery is solid and lifelong. During the past 50 years, the doctrine has become widely accepted in health circles that since control of measles has failed, man should learn to adapt himself to measles. And in fact, eradication was not considered to be scientifically tenable, which means that we've got a symbiotic relationship with the measles vaccine, with the measles virus, and that when children had appropriately aged measles, you had measles, I had measles, almost everybody in our age group did, and it was between 7 and 9 years of age, and that high amount of fever that those kids had locked in their immune system, and it made their white blood cells work better, their cytokines work better, it sealed in their basement membranes, it did a lot of different things that turned on the immune system and made children healthy going forward. The actual disease, once you have lifetime immunity, those antibodies pass through the breast milk to protect the children that were very young. The vaccine doesn't do the same thing. It's not the same antibodies that goes through the breast milk. And that's why they have concerns about measles in very young children now, because we've got vaccinated mothers who are not passing the right antibodies through. We also look at immune globulins as though it's the only part. When you get a vaccine, you get an IgG antibody, and people say that's immunity. Well, we've got case after case after case, stacks of cases that have shown that people that have high IgG antibodies and get the disease anyways. There is so much other science, quote unquote, and actual that Paul Offit would say he would throw underneath the bus that actually shows that these are real problems that we need to be talking about. And George, I would maintain that part of what we need to change is the whole conversation about vaccines. Instead of this polarity of your study versus
right.
my study.
And it's huge, that
and
polarity.
Your rights against my rights. And you then this, we need to say that vaccination came about 150 years ago. It came about when smallpox was a filth disease.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that your Mr. Bloom was talking about, this whole issue of smallpox. We know statistically and scientifically that at the turn of the century, at the beginning of the 1900s, that the smallpox virus transmuted and became a very mild form of the virus, and it became very mild for the vast majority of people. It wasn't the same very virulent virus that was happening back in the Roman Empire that was killing off thousands of people. It was a different disease. We also had hygiene. We had running water. We have refrigeration. We have good food. We have all of these different things that really doesn't make that argument hold any water anymore. And so we could change this language into saying, are we to the place in our society, in our time being, that we don't need all of these vaccines anymore? And every child does not need every single dose of every single vaccine, because we make the assumption they're all going to be exposed, and if you get exposed, you're going to be sick. We have to bring some rationality back to this conversation.
And it is, Sherry, and we'll take some final calls here for you in a second. It's a tough call for parents who don't want to use their kid as the guinea pig or the mistake.
It's exactly right. And as soon as you start vaccinating kids, you become the stage four clinical trials. Because stage one is in the test tube, stage two is in animals, stage three are small human studies. But until we actually start releasing this into large populations, and usually when they develop a vaccine, the only people it's been tested on are healthy children or healthy adults that have no medications. And as soon as they've been approved, we say, oh, we have to give it to everybody, even the sick kids. They must have this vaccine. And that's a clinical trial that's never been tested.
Okay, let's go to the calls. We'll start with Brenda in West Virginia. Hi, Brenda. Good morning.
Hi, George. Hi, Sherry. I have an interesting history with the flu vaccine. I'm 57 years old, and I started taking it when I was 18. When I was about 40 or so, I missed a shot. Whenever the H1N1 come out, I missed the shot because I couldn't find one that year. I couldn't get it anywhere, and I got one hell of a case of the flu, and it just about wiped me out. And I feel like that it just, I lost like 30% of my ability to do everything. And so, and it seems like everybody I know gets the flu, but I never have gotten the flu but that one time since I started taking them when I was 18. And also, I'd like to know, I had the regular shots when I was a kid, and I'm 57. Should I have any boosters of any of this?
Well, the first thing about you got the flu when you didn't get the shot. Well, I can tell you equally as many, if not more, people that said as soon as they got the shot, they got the flu. Right.
And I haven't had the flu, and I don't get the shot.
And I haven't had a flu shot ever, and I've never had the flu. And so, you know, you can't prove a negative, meaning if you get the shot and you don't get the flu, was it because of the shot, or was it because of something else in your system that didn't allow that flu virus to come in there and set up shop? The second question that she had about, you know, have my immunity waned? Well, most likely it has, because none of those vaccines cause IgG antibodies to last for more than about 12 or 15 years, and that's the rubella one that, as far as I know, that's the longest one. And so they wane over time because it's not natural immunity. Before she goes out and gets boosters, I would suggest that she has a blood test done that tests all of her antibody levels to see whether or not she needs.
All right, and you can do that, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Dr. Gary Ridenour, I asked the question, why are parents so scared of having kids who haven't been vaccinated with the kids who have been vaccinated? You would think if you've been vaccinated, you don't have to worry about the disease, whether somebody has it or not.
That's true, George, and that's what I think, again, it's one of these polarity things. And when they go back and they retrospectively do an analysis on an outbreak, there's been two different mumps outbreaks, there have been several pertussis outbreaks, and they're even saying this somewhat about the measles one that we're having right now. When you go backwards in time, it's the lion's share of kids who've gotten sick or the kids who've been fully vaccinated, and it's the kids who are unvaccinated who don't get sick at all.
Next up, we go to Tony in Seattle. Hi, Tony. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, George. Hello, Dr. Tenpenny. Yeah, I'm chomping at the bit here also. Let me just say this, George and Doctor, that when this first, I only have radio in this house, and so when I first heard this, the spokeslady came out and she said that it was because the parents were giving their kids the measles shots or the prevention for it.
Mm-hmm.
Next day it came out, oh, it came from overseas. So I think I speak for a lot of Americans where we don't trust this government. And the second thing was the doctor who doesn't get the flu shot but wants us to get the flu shot, he has zilch credibility with me. I mean, that's
it. Yeah, he's not a doctor, but you're right.
Yeah, that's very hypocritical for him to say that. And the thing with the Ebola, when it came out here, the Surgeon General, who I believe is a paper pusher and doesn't have real, and doctor, I'd like your comments on this, that doesn't have any real background in the medical profession. They were just, it was a fiasco, George, if you remember, just a fiasco.
Oh, I know it.
And then they want us to believe this government. Yeah. Oh, okay. And I'll take my answer off the air because I just got back from Thailand and I got to lay down.
All right, and go get your vaccine. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead, Sherry.
I'm not sure what the last part of that question was. Was it about trusting the government? Well, you know, we've got it. It seems as though it has been a metered thing, that it's sort of a contrived plan that every news outlet, every print, every radio, every television, except, of course, you, George, because you do give us a voice and allow us to say both sides.
I do the best I can with that.
I respect that. And you've got such a large audience, and I think your audience really respects the fact that you give contrarian opinions a voice where the mainstream media does not.
No, they've already got their minds made up, don't they?
Yeah, I was just, you know, there were several of us, we were on a little board tonight talking about when you get called by the mainstream media, because their protocol is that you're supposed to find a contrarian opinion. They never print what you say. They take things what you want to, you say out of context. They will cut you off and make you look like stupid because they'll cut you off mid-sentence. And you always let all of your guests, because we've been a longtime fan and a longtime listener of you too, George, and that you have people that may not have the most popular opinions, but you allow them to speak it. And I think that's what we need in this country.
I get emails from people who go, why do you have that person on? Because it's important to have different views.
Exactly.
Let's take a few more final calls. Tommy is truck driving in Michigan. Hey, Tommy, thank you for calling. Good morning. You're on the air with us.
Hi, George. I'm I'm actually been listening for a few months here, and I love your program.
Thank you.
You hit a lot of great topics, and this topic, I actually have a question for the doctor. We were trying to decide what to do with my son. My older son, he had a liver transplant almost 2 years ago, and he's not able to be vaccinated with any live vaccines, but they've been pushing the flu shot, which I refused, because there were several reports about it not even being effective and worth it this year because the strain was off.
No, you're right. They only say it's good about 25%.
If that.
So,
yeah.
And my other question, or maybe comment, maybe I could hear your opinion on or off air. Our youngest son just turned one, so he's right at the stage where he's getting all of his shots, and they wanted to do them right off the bat, like 8 or 9 shots in a row.
Holy crap.
And we didn't know if we believed in vaccines or if we didn't. You know, you hear contrary opinions, so the best kind of means that I could find was right in between. I said, okay, so we're going to get the vaccines, but we're not going to do it on your schedule.
Okay, we only got only a minute left, so I want Sherry to react for you, Tommy. Go for it, Sherry.
Okay, for one thing, you need to do more homework before you just proceed. The second thing is that many of the vaccines that your youngest son is going to get could shed and could possibly be a problem to your son that has the liver transplant, particularly MMR, chickenpox, and if he gets the flu mist, the one that goes up the nose, they all shed viruses, and that could be a problem. For your son that has the liver transplant, make sure you get a vitamin D level on him and keep his vitamin D and vitamin C level high, because just getting a vaccine, and it doesn't matter if it's your son with the transplant or if it's your younger son, just getting the vaccine does not necessarily mean you're not going to get sick. Said in another way, the vaccines are not there to protect you. You could still get sick anyways. They are not shown to be safe. It's for you on the individual level. They can cause harm. The U.S. government has paid out nearly $3 billion in vaccines.
Now that's a lot. Sherry, thank you for being on this program as well, as we tried to just give you enough information for you to go out and make up your own minds about vaccines. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burles, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.